We're CJMQ, and we're welcoming today Yannick Dodi. So welcome, Yannick. And you have returned from an extraordinary adventure, and that is biking 1,170 kilometers in Uganda.
Yeah, I just returned about a little bit over a month ago.
Okay. Okay, so you spent Christmas there. You were there in December?
Yeah, about a month, about 4 weeks.
Okay, so you there were 4 weeks. And tell us your adventure.
Well, it was quite a lot to take in. There's so many things happened. Basically, the point of it was to fundraise, to raise money to rebuild a school in the north. So there's been a conflict going on there for the past 23 years. And they call it the longest running war in Africa. The thing that's really special about that war is, well, first of all, it's not being talked about so much. And second, it involves a lot of child soldiers, a lot of abducted children, women, girls that are used as sex slaves, and boys that are used as child soldiers. So I was going there to rebuild a school that, because of that conflict, that had to stop. And to be displaced to another site because the original site was not safe anymore.
Okay, so you went there originally. I should mention to everybody that you have a lot of experience biking in different countries. You visited a lot of different remote countries, places with deserts, etc. But this is the first time that you've actually done it benefit the school. Is that correct?
Yes, it's not my first international cooperation sort of project, but it's the first time that I do it to fundraise, yes.
Okay, and before you went, people were buying so many kilometers for a certain amount of money, and when you got to that specific kilometer that the person had bought, you'd take a picture, send it back to the person by email, which is was a really fantastic idea too.
That was the idea. I wanted to give back to people something after their donation, so I figured I would do that. I didn't realize what a giant task, a Herculean task it was to actually do it after the first few kilometers. I couldn't believe that I would have to do that, you know, another whatever 70 times that day, and after, like, day after day after day to take a picture every kilometer. But I managed to do it. The only thing was obviously access to email. I only got access to the internet twice during the trip, so I actually got my parents involved. I uploaded all the pictures I had onto a website, and then I had my parents help me to send them to everybody, because it was a lot of work, and I couldn't dare. The connection was too slow, and it was so
that's understandable, and I'm sure that they more than supported you. Very proud of you, I imagine, too.
Oh, yes, they were, and they were happy to hear from me, because the first time I got to contact anybody was about 2 weeks in. I hadn't been completely in the bush for about 2 weeks, so they hadn't heard any news from me. So when they first got that first email, they were very happy and relieved.
Exactly. Now, you were raising money. You got a good response. You were raising money to rebuild the school, and especially the sanitation in the school too, if I remember.
Yes, the sanitation infrastructure. The water infrastructure, and because they're trying right now in the north to move people back from the displaced site back to their original site, because the rebels have been pushed out of the country right now. They're in Congo.
Okay.
And so they're trying to get people to move back to the original site. So we're rebuilding the original school and trying to get the children to go back to the original school.
You must develop a lot of relationships too, to see the looks on the people's faces, and that must really spur you on too.
Yeah, it was amazing. I met, for example, a group of women who had been abducted when they were children, and they had escaped. Some of them had just escaped maybe 2 years ago was the most recent. Mm-hmm. And these women had been abducted at the age of around 9, 10, and they've been raped for maybe 8, 9 years in the bush by the rebels. Mm-hmm. And they have many kids. They don't even know how, like, they don't necessarily live with them, because when they escaped, they didn't necessarily manage to get all their kids with them. Mm-hmm. And these are kids from the rapes, and they have many diseases, and just and so they've lived through atrocious, like, I can't even describe. We can't even understand what they could have lived through. And but when they saw me, they all started applauding, and they were and they were so happy to see me and to see what I was doing. And I couldn't believe that they were still impressed. But something could still impress them after, like, I thought that what I did was basically nothing compared to something that they've lived through. And yet, I don't know, I show such a humanity and such a openness and just It was just wonderful to meet people like that and people that have been abducted as kids, that have been tortured, that have seen their parents killed in front of them, and to exchange with them and to still be on that same level, to exchange openly, and it was just wonderful.
Exactly. Certainly an adventure with a lot of emotion, and also narrow escapes too, as you mentioned too. So
I mean, I was basically, the plan was to follow the border with the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo, all the way north. So I started south, close to the border with Rwanda, and I went north almost to the border with Sudan. And so I was following the border with Congo the whole time. And there was another conflict that's going on in Congo with the rebels of Laurent Nkunda. And they, so I was cycling basically very close to their territory the whole time. And for example, one night I camped, maybe I was about 300 meters from rebel controlled territory. And there was an army camp a little bit further up. They sent me two armed guards to come and stand in front of my tent armed the whole night. So okay. I was sleeping in my tent, and I had two armed guards holding their automatic rifles right in front of my tent. I had an automatic rifle pointed in my head at one point. It was a little bit of a misunderstanding. It was in the middle of the night. The person didn't know who I was, but things like that. So it was, it's an area that, even though when you're going through, there's no, like, the actual areas I went through, there's no more war or anything going on, because the rebels are in another country right now. The people and everybody's still in that mode, and it's very hard to come out of something after having lived for 23 years of war. It's
exactly.
There are guns everywhere. I would arrive in the middle of the night in towns and pass what looked like kids, like 16-year-olds holding automatic rifles. They would just walk by in front of me, and it was very very weird.
Exactly. So the fallout from the war lasts a long time, and especially the war lasting a long time, so the fallout will be there for a while.
Absolutely. And the one thing that really scares the people over there is the revenge. Right now, every time the army, the government army, has managed to push the rebels back a little bit, they managed to come back even either stronger or to do even more damage or more atrocities. They're never quite sure that this is the end, because it keeps, it's something that keeps going back and forth. So they're basically been terrorized, their whole life. So it's difficult.
Exactly. Okay, this is your first time biking in Uganda?
In Uganda, yes.
Okay, great. And you are putting on a presentation. It's titled Safe Journey, and I know when I interviewed you with that, we certainly hoped that you would have a safe journey. So thankfully you're back here in the townships, and the presentation's called Safe Journey. That's going to be taking place at Centennial Theater on the campus of Bishop's University, and it's certainly open to the public, students, public, any age group, and I'm sure that anybody's going to get a lot of information out of this, and a lot of feeling, a lot of awareness, because as you said, it's not talked about a lot, what's going on there.
No, and that's why it was very important for me to do this presentation and to make it free so that everybody can come, and also to run the Centennial Theater, which is sort of the largest venue around here, to hold it. I really hope as many people are going to come out as possible. The presentation itself is going to be, obviously there's going to be a pretty serious tone at the beginning and at the end, because I'm going to be talking about the conflict. But for the main part of it, that's going to be the travelogue. It's basically going to be pretty light and entertaining way. So I'm basically going to present it the way I travel and the way I view things. And I always... I'm very sort of optimist.
You're an optimist.
Yes,
definitely. Person. You and, have to be.
Yes. And so as I go and as I am faced with different situations, like, animals, lions, things like that, there's a lot of sort of entertaining stories on how I managed to get my way around the country. So it will be both an informative presentation, but also an entertaining one.
Okay, and that's Wednesday, the 18th, Centennial Theater, 5:30 p.m., and the presentation is free. Now, if somebody wants to give a donation, is there any place where you can give a donation there too?
Yes, we will have the NGO I was partnered with is called Invisible Children, and we're going to have some people representing Invisible Children there that are going to be accepting donations.
Okay. So exactly, you were saying you had to deal with the animals too. You had some tree climbing lions too?
Yes, I passed through an area. This is the only area in the world where they have these types of lions. They're called tree climbing lions, and they stay in trees. And at some point I was cycling, and this was completely in the bush. Like, there was no village anywhere close. I hadn't passed a village in hours. And I cycled past a tree. Basically, the tree was overhanging over the road, and there were two lions in it. And I happened to pass three times under the tree, because the first two times was actually a mistake. I didn't know. I hadn't seen the lions. Mm-hmm. And I was cycling back and forth. And so I passed the first time under it. I never saw them. I passed the second time under it, never saw them. And the third time I went through, I actually saw them. And then my heart sort of stopped. And I realized that I had just passed under the lions a few times. And I thought that they probably will start to get... to wonder why this, you know, piece of meat on a bicycle keeps going in front of them. And the last time that I actually cycled under them, one of them got up and started coming towards me, and that was very scary. I sort of almost lost my balance, because I was trying to take a picture at the same time, and it was a little scary for a second there, but it ended up fine. The lion stayed in its tree. So
okay, so if that was somebody's kilometer, you just kept going to the next one.
I do have that picture, and it is, and somebody did get it. So it was the kilometer picture. Yeah,
that's pretty neat. Okay, I would imagine you had to do a lot of research, animals, all kinds of what we don't even think of.
Yeah, luckily I have traveled in Africa before, and I have some experience with the animals. For example, the most dangerous animal in Africa, the number one killer as far as animals go for humans, is the hippopotamus. And I had experience before, like camping in areas where there's hippopotamus and stuff like that. So, and I had to deal a lot with those. I at one point they run me out of, I was bathing in the Nile. Mm-hmm. The Nile is, most people don't know, but the Nile actually takes its source in Uganda. So, I was following it for a while, and at some point I was bathing in the Nile, again, alone, just bush camping. And, two hippopotamus, decided the pool that I had, they sort of liked it. So they ran me out of it. And, just for example, camping, you can't camp too close to the shore, because they come out at night to graze. Okay. They don't come out during the day. They have very sensitive skin, so they stay underwater during the day. So there's that. There were the lions, the leopards, the elephants, the crocodiles. So it was full of animals. And most of the places that I choose to travel through are more remote, because I prefer to be on that than being on major roads or something like that. So I tend to encounter those more than you would normally.
Okay. I think Africa would be one of the most exciting places to visit, and yet at the same time, one of the most dangerous.
Yeah, it is. There's something absolutely amazing about still being able to see these animals in their natural environment, and completely, like, it's like if you were traveling, hundreds of years ago. It's there's something amazing about that, just living it. And I know camping, in the middle of the bush at night, hearing all the noises, and, almost feeling, if you would have an elephant walk by the tent, I would actually feel, in my stomach, like you would feel the stomp. And it was just, there's something so, you feel so little, and it sort of makes you realize, like how wonderful and how big nature is, and how much stuff there is, and how little we really are, and how interconnected also we are with everything, because we, everything that I did over there was, when I was looking for water, I had to drink from the rivers, or even looking for food, or it was always dealing with the environment all around me. I was completely integrated in it, and it was a wonderful thing.
Okay. Certainly gives you a chance to get in touch with a different side of yourself too.
Yes. And that's something that I find very important in traveling. Having crossed deserts, and having climbed mountains, and done things like this, like crossing savannas. At some point, I got lost in the bush. I left for about a three-day little expedition. I was trying to follow the Nile on the south side in an area that had never really been done before. And so I was completely in the bush, and I got lost. And, you end up in these moments where you're completely by yourself, and you're just... the only thing you have to do is think, there's nothing else. So you're just thinking about things, and you get to know yourself a lot. You get to know your limits. You get to know what you can do. And it's amazing because there were two moments in that trip, one that followed the other pretty closely. And I'm going to talk about this during my presentation, so I'm not going to give too much away. But basically, there was a moment of great success in my trip. So I did something that was physically, it was praised by many people. And that gave me this confidence, but it was almost a false confidence. It was after having done that, I said, okay, now that if I can do this, I can do something else. And I picked something that was too much, and I failed. So it was this big success followed by this big failure, and it's you know, you learn about yourself, and then it makes you reevaluate things, and it was good. So I'm very happy, you know, to live these experiences, because I get to know exactly who I am and what I can do and what I can't do.
That's great. And I imagine that the vegetation there is too quite interesting too.
The point also of following the border with the Congo is that it was I was going through all these different zones. So I started off in the mountainous south, which was amazing, beautiful mountains, huge valleys, snow-capped peaks. And then I moved on to more savanna and almost more desert. It was almost very dry. And then moved on through lakes. I had at some point to cross Lake Albert, which is a huge lake. You know, just amazing experiences like that, where you have to deal with the elements. And just, for example, crossing that lake, that was something that wasn't done the way I crossed it. I just, by looking at maps, I like to sort of imagine my route, even though there's no, it's not something that's normally done or something like that. And I had sort of, I thought it would be nice if I could get to this lake on the south side and somehow get to the eastern side and then keep cycling from there. But when I arrived on the south side, like, this was not something that was done. So I had to deal with the people. I had to go through little remote villages to try and find somebody that would be able to take me. And it was just, you know, having to deal with the environment and with all these things got me to meet amazing people, to face extraordinary circumstances. And in the end, it worked out. For example, for that, I managed to cross the lake, and it was like one of the most amazing parts of my journey. So
interesting. And if you just joined us, we're CJ and Q, and we're talking today with Yannick Dodi, and he's returned a couple of weeks ago. He biked 1,170 kilometers in Uganda to raise money to rebuild a school over there for the children, and for the sanitation in the school, the water, etc. Now, your main purpose, that was successful. You raised quite a bit of money, so they're rebuilding the school? Or?
Yes, I went and I did. Once I got to the north, I went with the NGO and we did some field visits. So it's a pretty impressive thing to get to this town in the north called Gulu, and that's the center, sort of the biggest capital and the biggest city in the north.
Okay.
And I've been in other conflict zones before, but I've never sort of seen such a... You arrive in this town and basically every other building or every vehicle that you pass belongs to an ONG. Like, you see the UN, Free the Children, UNICEF, CPAR, War Child, you know, Invisible Children. It's just one after the other. It's amazing. The whole town is basically built of NGOs, and so that was something that just struck me when I got there, because there are so many. This city is where everybody moved during the conflict. Everybody was moving to the city because that could be protected by the government. So it's just a city that's unlike any other. It's the whole surrounding is full of IDPs, which are internal displaced people, all camps all around. And so I went to visit some of these camps. I spent some time in them. And I went to visit also the schools that we were rebuilding, so farther away from the actual town. And I've just been so impressed with this NGO in particular. I couldn't believe it. One of the reasons I went there was also, and especially taking money from people and then, you know, telling them I'm gonna give this money to this NGO. I wanted to make sure that, you know, the money was going where it's supposed to. And this was something important for me, because I know a lot of people are a bit hesitant in giving, because they, you know, we hear these stories that, you know, you give a dollar and maybe, you know, 5% actually goes to somebody.
Okay.
And I was so impressed. The first thing that impressed me is arriving and going to their main office, and there's maybe 100 people working there. It's a huge thing. They have many programs. They have economic development programs. They have programs that are working with the children, you know, to rehabilitate them. They have the programs working for schools. They have... And in these 100 people, I met, there were three white people, three white in 100. So just that already told me this was a good sign, because too many times, I think, you know, foreigners go abroad and they might start an organization like that, an NGO or something, and, you know, they're trying to run it, but they are foreigners. They don't know mm-hmm. the reality. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have travel as much as you want. If you're not from the country, like, you don't necessarily know the culture, you don't know. And it's just, that was a great first sign already that 97% basically of the staff was Ugandan. And talking to the staff, it was amazing. Some of these people had left government jobs that were paying twice as much to come work for this NGO because they believed in the cause. And it was just so nice to be with people like that and to meet people that are doing things because they believe in it. And even the white people that were there, I mean, these people were not making any money. They were there because they believed in the cause. I mean, they don't get any vacation. They're there, you know, I mean, working.
They're there, yeah, because it's, of their passion. And
absolutely.
Their heart.
It's exactly. It was wonderful to just spend, you know, I spent a few days with them up there and, you know, visiting the school, seeing the reconstruction. I saw, you know, the water in different schools because they are dealing with different schools. Mm-hmm. So the one that the money that we raised went towards is not yet being there's mm-hmm. they're starting to build mm-hmm. it, but there was nothing mm-hmm. to see concrete mm-hmm. Except, you know, a pile of bricks and people starting to put them together mm-hmm. but I have seen during the field visits other schools where, you know, you have huge water tanks, you have brand new dormitories for girls, for example, dormitories mm-hmm. for girls, new classrooms. It was just so impressive. And to see the work, I went with some engineers on the ground from the NGO to see how much detail they put into everything and how much effort. We would go to a building, they would actually, with their hands, dig in the dirt to see if the foundation was safe or not. They would, you know, press against things, they would lift, they would, for example, we had just installed a new water pump in one of the schools. You know, they had the water pump unlocked, they tested the water, I mean, it was amazing to see how much, like, things are actually happening, and it was very hopeful to see. I mean, it's just, it's great to hear about these stories. And I met many people along my trip, you know, that have lived through horrible, horrible things. And to see that, you know, there is something happening for them and that there seems to be hope because of NGOs like this. Like, it's people that believe in what they're doing and mm-hmm. the way they're going about rehabilitating and making people take themselves in charge and, for example, helping them start their businesses and helping them start a life on their own without depending on anybody else. I find that wonderful.
It is wonderful. Exactly. Good. And it must be so reassuring for you, too, to give these people some hope and some chance in their life, and especially the children, too.
It definitely feels good to meet them. And like I said, just, for example, these women applauding me or mm-hmm. things like that, you know, it's... I don't even... I feel almost ashamed, you know, when they were applying me, like, because of what they've lived through and, mm-hmm. and these types of things. But obviously, yes, it does feel good to mm-hmm. see that you're actually making a difference, or you're, you know, what I did was not for nothing. I leave this country, I come back here, and I know that, you know, something has changed a little bit over mm-hmm. there. And also I've decided, coming back, I'm actually building an internship in an orphanage that I stayed at over there.
Okay.
To send some volunteers there, students or mm-hmm. Anybody actually from the community that would be interested in going. So I'm developing an internship. I feel, you know, the more I travel, the more it's important I realize to leave something, like to not just go take, you know, and mm-hmm. like when you travel, you take a lot from the place, but what do you really leave? And sure, you know, I've exchanged with people and, you know, there's this exchange of ideas, which is amazing. So I leave that, of course, but also if I can do something more, I will. And I found, like, for example, with this orphanage, that there was a lot of need and they do want foreigners to come just for that exchange of ideas and things. So I found it was a great opportunity to do something like this. So now I'm developing an internship there with the person
wonderful.
In charge. Yes.
Wonderful, too. Certainly open a lot of doors for people, too, over there and here, too.
Yeah. Yes.
Good. Great. And I should remind everybody, too, that, Nick did this all on his own. He didn't have somebody watching his back during the day or
no.
the night or different experiences.
So. No, that's right. Although sometimes it might have been nice, maybe. Yeah. But I was completely alone. I remember some moments where, you know, it could have been nice to have had... somebody else around or something. Mm-hmm. When you're alone, you're often, especially camping and things like that. Mm-hmm. I remember when I first mm-hmm. I started off, I was in this group of the people who sent me off were a group of internally displaced people. It was wonderful. Mm-hmm. They were this big group of who have, again, been either lost their families or have terrible diseases or have been raped by the rebels or have mm-hmm. have been, you know, handicapped, like cut hands, cut mm-hmm. feet, something like that. Mm-hmm. And so it's this group of people that sent me off. And I remember them not believing I would make it alive. Like they kept asking me questions. They didn't want to let me go. And they said, you know, there's no way you're going to make it to the north mm-hmm. Because they asked me, where am I going to sleep as I do this? And I was showing them my bicycle. I actually brought my bicycle out and they were looking at it mm-hmm. and stuff. They were very impressed, of course. And then they said, where are you going to sleep? And when I said, I'm going to camp, they said, you can't camp alone. They said, nobody camps alone in Uganda. They said, you're going to be killed. And but really my experience, except for, you know, a few nights, my experience was just one that was amazing. I was welcomed, you know, when there were people around, they would welcome me in and mm-hmm. they would give me, you know, I would get food and everything. So shelter. So it was, I didn't really feel, and that's why I'm calling my presentation Safe Journey. I think that's important that there's an image that we have of the country and then there's the reality when you're on mm-hmm. the ground. And of course there are parts, you know, where I ended up in sort of scary situations or something like that. But in general, like the bulk of the population, the people, I felt very safe, mm-hmm. you know, around them and very welcomed. And it was just, it was a wonderful, safe journey. So
yeah, it's wonderful. And I think people probably are surprised that you were so welcomed and everything too. And
yeah, yes. And I mean, it's that's what I want to pass, you know, through my presentation. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I want people to realize is the people I met along the way, you know, they're not all these crazy rebels that are trying to kill, mm-hmm. you know, the first white mm-hmm. person they see or anything like that. It was all human beings just like us. And they don't want, they're not any more violent than we are or not anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just trying to live as peacefully as they can.
Okay, great. So Safe Journey, taking place at Centennial Theater on the campus of Bishop's University. It's for everybody. It's free. Wednesday, the 18th of February, 5:30 p.m. So that's going to be great. Is there any chance of you making any DVDs or anything of these presentations and maybe selling them for profit too for the schools? Or?
Yeah, the presentation will be filmed. Mm-hmm. And I'm planning on making a DVD just for the NGO, for example, and okay. then mm-hmm. also from, for example, my parents who live very mm-hmm. far away. Mm-hmm. There will be a DVD, yes. If people contact me by email or I can, for example, send them a DVD if they're interested. Yes, if they can't make it to a presentation.
Okay, that's great. Anything else you wanted to mention before we go, Yannick?
No, just that basically I would like as many people to attend as possible. And if you're thinking of attending, try and bring your friends, your family. Again, this is open to everybody. It's free. And the point is really to raise awareness. I think that's mm-hmm. the first step in making mm-hmm. a difference. Just to get as many people out as possible.
And just to see the pictures too, I guess.
Yes, the pictures are.
It's going to be a great experience, a real eye-opener too. Okay, well, thank you very much, Yannick.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.